Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Coach Darlington, it's an honor to have you on the USA Football Coach and Coordinator Podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Coach, you guys do so many things that are unique at Apopka. Let's start with the off-field stuff in your off-season program. Talk to us about how what you do is a little bit different from what everybody else does.
You know, a lot of coaches come and visit with us in the off-season and what they seem to see. You know, because, again, I'm so close to it because it's what I do, what we do, so I don't really notice it that much. But they talk about the culture and the way our kids work and the way they – you know, are good teammates and they care about each other and their attitude towards coming to work every day. You know, I guess that's somewhat different, you know, and we have high expectations of them and, you know, they generally do what they can to meet them.
And Coach, obviously that doesn't start with just talking about it, that you guys have to take some action on it. So let's focus first on what you guys are doing to make these guys good teammates to each other and build that into your culture.
I just think it's something we talk about all the time. It's something you can't take for granted. You know, this last season, we really felt that we didn't have the season we wanted to have. You know, we were undefeated the entire regular season, number one in the state, but then we got upset in the first round of the playoffs. And so it was a bad ending and it left a bad taste in our mouth. And so over Christmas, I contacted a bunch of former players and I asked them, you know, what Apopka football meant to them. You know, what five words would you tell me and explain to me what they mean about what the program means to you now, what it meant to you then when you were playing. And so I took all their responses, and then I asked our current players the same thing when we came back from Christmas break. I asked them the same thing. And then I counted all that. We came up with what our core values were. And you know, I think that if you talk about things and you think things are important, but your kids don't list those things, and there's some sort of a disconnect there. And so the things that our guys came up with, number one was Hokahei. That's kind of our program mantra. And it's a Sioux Indian term, which means it is a great day to die, you know, being willing to lay down your life for your friends, for your brothers. And we talk about unselfishness and laying it down for the good of the program. You know, it's not about you, it's not about me, it's about us. And so we talk about that every day. So number one was Hokahei. That was the all-encompassing motto of our program. And then the six core values that the kids listed were: number one was brotherhood, number two was honor, number three was humility, number four was discipline, number five was perseverance, number six was faith. And so those are things that we talk about, and we figure since this is what they believe in and they think we're about and that's what we as coaches want to be about, then those are the things we're going to emphasize and talk about every day. And so that's really what it is just making things important by talking about them all the time and emphasizing them. You know, when you don't see it, you want to push it. And when you do see it, you want to praise it. So that's kind of where we've been the last 4 months or so.
And Coach, and talking to Brian Kite, who – works with Focus 3 and did a lot with Urban Meyer and their culture. You know, we talk about how, you know, behavior really is your culture. What you see those guys doing, that's your culture. So when coaches come in and see that, obviously that's what you're developing. You know, how does that build in the off-season program for you?
Well, that's where you learn to strain and to put yourself in uncomfortable positions and to rely on yourself and to, you know, not, you know, take shortcuts or miss reps or miss whatever, and you know, you're not doing it for yourself, you're doing it for your brother next to you. You know, so that's really where you really push it and emphasize it. That's where it's always been with us, you know, from the day after we lost in the playoffs, you know, the next Monday we were back in there working. You know, we worked, unfortunately, we had probably a month before Christmas to work, and, you know, so we did that, and then we did a preliminary test, you know, our off-season test in December. And then we came back and started working in January and, you know, pushed hard, had a great all season. And, you know, we had some guys transfer out early, right after Christmas, and they needed to go. You know, it was really a blessing that they win, because they're very cancerous guys, very divisive. And it was good to get rid of them. And the guys that are still there have been awesome. You know, there were some guys who probably might have been on the fence, and they actually fell to the good side. And, you know, we've had a great camaraderie and a good feeling in our program the entire off season. You know, so that was good. And then we started spring ball at the end of April. It's been going and working and pounding, and spring's pretty tough because you get 20 practices and it's hot, you know, 90 degrees plus down here, and you know, all humidity. So, you know, it's tough, you know, but this is the things that we do to, you know, hopefully win championships and build men in the process.
Coach, when you end up with a situation like that, with those guys who are divisive, and you know, you said it was fortunate they left your program. Let's say they weren't leaving on their own accord. How do you handle those situations where you either, you know, bring them on board or find a way to get them to dismiss themselves?
Well, I've always felt that, you know, our program's about building men, and it's good for young men to be in our program. And so if a young man is a problem, we want to fix the problem. We want to help him get, you know, past his mistakes. And, you know, we've had lots of problem kids that we were able to help them turn themselves around attitude-wise, and they went on to be great college football players, maybe even NFL players. You know, and so if you're a problem on your own, we want to help you. But I've said this a lot of times too, is this: the man is more important than the player, but the team is more important than any man. And so we care more about your attitude than your ability. But when your attitude starts to affect negatively those around you, that's when you have to go. And so we removed two players last year, and then some other guys were kind of wanting to follow them still. And so they ended up going to another school, and the other guys followed them down there. And again, you know, that's probably the best thing in the long run for that program, you know.
Coach, in your evaluation of the program, obviously you wanted to change things in the off season. How important is it, as you say, okay, these are our core values, that your coaching staff is in step with you and on board to move forward? And I didn't say you would be adopting new things, but really putting the focus on some of the things that were important in your program.
Yeah, well, I've got a great coaching staff, and we lost some coaches this year too. You know, I had a great assistant coach get become a head coach, and he deserved that opportunity. And you know, our longtime defensive coordinator ended up, you know, stepping out of coaching. And then I have another coach that's taken a job in Texas. So we've lost some really good coaches, but I've been able to replace them, again, with like-minded men. That's really the key, is to, you know, have like-minded men that we all feel the same about young men and discipline in our program, what we represent. And so the staff's been great. But, again, there weren't a lot of changes in our program that we had to make. It was more just reemphasizing things and never taking things for granted. You know, because you can't – every season's different. Every group of kids is different. And the chemistry is different. The camaraderie is different. The intangibles are different. And so it's one of those things you have to continually emphasize and talk about, you know. And if it's on our lips every day, hopefully it'll be on their mind.
Coach, finding that the like-minded guys in an interview is almost an art. Obviously, putting together a coaching staff today is kind of a difficult thing, to find guys who are going to be – on the same page with you all the time, like you said, like-minded in their mission. What recommendations do you have for coaches out there as they're going into, you know, especially those young guys building a staff, going into an interview process and finding out the things you need to? I think sometimes maybe we put the guy on the board or have them run through film with us and check those things out maybe a little bit more than some of those other things you might want to emphasize. How do you do that?
Yeah, I've never done any of that stuff you just listed. I don't care, and I don't ask good questions. You know, what we've done, when I want to talk to a coach, what I do is I bring them in, and I make them watch our kids in the off-season program for a day. I want them to see how our kids work, and I want to see how – I want this coach, potential coach, to see how they respond to coaching, the way they talk to each other, the way they work. I want them to see that. I want the coach to see how we push them, how we talk to them. And I want to see if he feels like, hey, I can be a part of this. And if he feels like, man, what you got to do is special, I want to be a part of this, well, that's the guy that we want to, you know, continue to look at. You know, I'm not really looking for guys to come in and think they're the gift to coaching, that really want to bring a bunch of stuff to us. You know, hopefully when I hire coaches, they will have good ideas and make our program better. But I think our program is pretty special. You know, and I think a young coach can come in and benefit from being in it, you know, adopting our way and stepping in line with the things that we believe in. And then, you know, after they see the program, you know, they might want to ask B questions, you know, and then I kind of lay it all out how we do things year round, you know, whether it be the off season, spring football, the summertime, you know, during the season, you know, all of it. I just lay it out for them so they know kind of what they're getting into up front. You know, and then it always comes back to if you can fit a guy in the proper teaching position, because it's harder and harder to find guys that are good young guys that want to be a serious teacher nowadays. And, you know, we're not really interested in having guys that are working a job and trying to get off and be in our school by, you know, 3 o'clock every day or whatever, practice. That's not what I need. I need guys in the building. You know, we've got pretty much our entire coaching staff in our school as teachers. And that's what I want. I want guys that, you know, our kids are going to see in the hallways, and we're going to be able to keep them accountable and check on them every day. And so, again, to bring a guy in, you know, he might have to be a really good history teacher or a good math teacher. And so that's harder and harder nowadays. You know, it's harder and harder to become a teacher as far as the requirements and the lack of autonomy and the regulations and guidelines each school system has. It's definitely more and more difficult to get good young people in education nowadays. So it's hard to hire coaches, like you said. And I've been very thankful to get some good ones.
Coach, let's talk about your offense, something you've become known for really nationally. And I know part of it is you go around the country and speak at the Glazer clinics, but you guys certainly have developed a reputation for what you're doing on offense. First of all, you know, for those who haven't heard about what you do, how would you describe your offense to us?
Like 1907 Pop Warner offense. We run the single wing, and not many people run it, that's for sure. You know, so if you're trying to please the booster club, the parents, the players, and the fans, it's not the offense you want to run. If you really don't care what people think and you just want to win and be different, well, then it may be something to consider.
Coach, how does that offense present an advantage for you?
Well, it's so different. You know, it's very powerful because with the lack of a quarterback, we have a tailback, fullback, blocking back, and wingback. So we're able to get numbers in the point of attack and be very, very physical. And, you know, we practice physical, we lift physical, we train physical. Everything we do, physical is our niche. We want to be tougher. You know, we want to literally beat teams down in the fourth quarter and make them quit. And when we feel that after halftime, we feel teams starting to kind of back off a little bit, that's how we win games. You know, I think it helps our defense to be tough by having to face it all spring. Our defense does a great job defending us, but it's a very physical offense. We've won state championships just by being more physical and running our basic plays, but people don't see the basic plays because no one really runs it. You know, nationally, there's very few teams that you know of that run it. And so when we started running about 10 years ago, I said, well, if we can do this, great. We're going to have, you know, kind of the corner of the market, because I don't think other people are going to follow it, because it's so unlike what football is nowadays. You know, football nowadays is RPOs and option and, you know, basketball on grass and spread it out, get people touches and spread the field. And we're the opposite of that. You know, we want to bring you into, you know, a phone booth and beat the heck out of you. You know, I remember actually one of my favorite movies was 300, you know, about the Spartans.
Yep.
And King Leonidas. And I remember when the Persians were descending upon him, he had a quote to his soldiers. He goes, "We will funnel them into the hot gates where their numbers count for nothing." And I said, that's our offense right there. You know, I mean, one time we were playing a team that the year we played them, we won the state in 8A and they won the state in 5A in Florida. They're very, very talented. Private school. They had like 16 Division I players on their team. And so a writer asked me, you know, Coach, they've got the number one cornerback in the country. You know, how are you going to deal with him? And I go, well, unless he can tackle the C-gap, beat about three blockers, I'm not worried about him. And that's kind of how we look at it. You know, we're trying to put people in a situation to defend something that they've never had to defend. And it's one thing to come up with a scheme, and that's hard enough when you've never seen something. But number two is the physicality of it and the constant pounding for four quarters. So I think it's given us an advantage in that area.
Hey, Coach, obviously the main premise of the as you call it, the 1907 Pop Warner single wing, is to outnumber people at the point of attack. So as far as a starting point or a base play, what does that look like for you? You know, what is the base play in the single wing offense that you're running?
Well, our base plays, we run three to the strong side and three to the weak side, and we always flip our line. So right and left doesn't really matter. It's all strong and weak. But to the strong side, we run the sweep, the power, and the fullback ISO, or back they, then they used to call it the seam buck. And then to the weak side, we run the trap and a weak back counter, and then a weak side sweep. So we've got three plays each way, and that's really all we do. But off those three plays, we can run nakeds and options, and we can run RPOs, which is the rage nowadays. And we can use lots of different formations and motions while staying unbalanced 100% of the time, and passing directions. And so when you're looking at all we do, it looks like a lot, but it really isn't for us.
Coach, with every player owning the play, what kind of information do they bring to you on the sideline that helps you make those adjustments in the game?
Well, again, it's not so much stuff that you have to have during the game. It's already built into the play, you know, because, you know, we do have huddle sideline. We can look at the film, you know, during the game and see how they're playing us and this and that. But that's really more a correct mistake on the sideline as we're playing. The plays are, you know, it's not like we have a play that's only good against this front, or if you give us this other front, we can't run that play.
Right.
You know, all of our plays, we only have six, are built that we're going to run them no matter what front we see. And the adjustments are built into the play. The players make the adjustments based on the look. So, you know, that's the way we built the system, and it's been really good for us.
Well, Coach, you mentioned that you got into a little bit of RPO. How does that work for you in the single wing? I guess, taking a step back, a lot of the single wing is kind of some of the things we saw with jump passes and seams and stuff like that,
yeah,
that look like RPOs anyway. So how have you progressed to that?
Well, we do a lot of pulling. You know, we'll pull the blocking back, we'll pull guards. And so people that play us are going to key those positions. And so what we'll do is we might, you know, run a play that we pull guards in the blocking back one way, but we're going to read a backer. And if he vacates that area, we're going to run a route behind him. And so, you know, those have been good for us. And that tends to slow down linebackers. And last year, you know, we'd see on film against some really good teams, we're on a trap play, and their linebackers are dropping into coverage because they're so worried about the RPOs behind them. And so I think that makes our offense even a little bit more tough to defend, knowing that if you read your keys well, we're watching you read your keys well. And we do have an answer for that, you know, by putting someone in vacating that area. You know, we're also big on naked plays, and we'll pull a lot of guys one way and have someone keep it the other, you know. So, again, those are things that are kind of, you know, the things you can get into down the road with your offense after you kind of understand how it all works and how people are trying to defend it. So this spring we've been working a lot on RPO game out of the single wing and working on option out of the single wing. And that's been a lot of fun to work on.
It seems like with, you know, again, with what I know, and believe me, I have limited knowledge on the single wing, but I do know a little bit about it, that it almost seems like a natural progression. It is, you know, exactly like you said, hey, you're pulling guys, you have guys keying you, and it seems like, okay, you know, especially with some of that compressed formation you have, that it's easy to progress to that once you have the basic understanding of the offense.
Well, it just takes time, and you got to have the right guy back there doing it too. You know, some quarterbacks or fullback, tailback, whatever you call them, are, you know, more confident in doing that type of thing than other ones are, you know. And so it takes the right trigger man back there to do it, but it's something that we like to do, and, you know, it can make us tougher to defend, I think.
Coach, you've been blessed with some pretty good personnel at Apopka, guys who have gone on to the highest level. But an offense like this, can it exist in a place that maybe has players who are below average in size, or maybe what other people would say aren't as talented as the other team?
I think that's definitely a good offense to run if you don't have the talent. I've said before, you can run this with two good skill guys and nine cones. you know, you know, so that's kind of funny, but, you know, you really give Violet a pretty good wing back and a tailback. You know, we've done that before, but, you know, we had 3 years in a row from 2013 to 15 that we had 3,000 rushers on each team. And those kids, it was six different kids, and four or six, you know, Division I player at all, you know, normal high school kids. We had a kid 1 year lead the state in 2,371 yards rushing, and he had one scholarship offer to a Division II school. So we don't really have the great, great players people think that we have. We've had some good players, but lately we've been on a run of linemen. You know, we've had my son Ty was an Army All-American in 2011, and then Martez Ivy was an Army All-American in 2014. Will Barnes is an Army All-American coming up this year, and then Ed Montillo is tackles been nominated for this game also. So we've had some really good linemen, you know, and some tough players like Chandler Cox, who, you know, was to Auburn, started as a freshman. And then we had a blocking back tight end named Trey Henderson that went to college, became a defensive end, and just got drafted in the third round by the Saints. And so, you know, that's the thing about this offense that was kind of interesting to me, Keith, is that the blocking back is the position on the team. Without that guy, it just does not go. And so we're always trying to find the blocking back, you know. And so it takes a time to find the right guy.
Is he kind of like today's modern H-back? Is that the type of guy you look for?
That's exactly what he is. That's exactly what he is. You know, but he's kind of a battering ram to us. So.
Well, Coach, we're running here towards the end of the time we have available. Let me ask you this one question, and you guys have been having a ton of success there at Apopka. What's the one thing you would point to that gives your team the winning edge?
I think that if I was going to say one thing, it would probably be – I think that – obviously, I think the offense has been a big thing. I think that if we didn't run the offense, I don't think we'd be winning championships. You know, I think that we might be okay. But to get into playoffs and to play some of the teams that we play, without running the single wing, I don't think we would get past maybe the second round. So that's been good. But I think overall what makes our program special is probably the discipline, both the discipline and the love we have for the kids, but just the expectations we have. You know, and I think that, you know, that's really been the key, is to have the discipline and the toughness, try to really make that our niche, you know, because not everyone can be the best spread team in the world. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's so many great spread teams out there. There's hundreds of them. Mm-hmm. And we don't have the type of player that we could be good at that, Keith, you know. But I think that we do have the type of players that we can be tough and physical, and we can have some little backs, and we have some big linemen that can run well, and you know, we can train to really run our single wing the way we do. And again, it's kind of like the Spartans. You know, we train in a very different manner, and we want to do things very differently. You know, I've always said, if you can't be better, you have to be different. And if you're different and you're very talented, you can win championships. So I think that, you know, philosophy of toughness and discipline and brotherhood, I think that is the way we train. That's the way we treat our young men. That's what we expect from them. That's how we treat them. And then that carries over into the way we play on the field. And I think that's why we've been able to win championships and hopefully build men, you know, that are better for our world in the future.
Well, Coach, we certainly appreciate what you're doing for the game. You're certainly a good ambassador to that. And it's great that you get out there around the country and speak at the Glazier clinics. If our listeners want to get in contact with you or connect with you, how can they do that?
Yeah, the best way is just to text me. My cell number is 352-455-9563. And I'm certainly happy to answer any texts. I've always, you know, felt that's important. But, you know, I like to do it. I like to talk ball with the guys and try to help, and many have helped me. And I'm definitely a guy who realizes how blessed I've been to be able to go and share with other coaches, go around the country and do it. And I'm very thankful, and so I'm certainly happy to help others.
Coach, I appreciate you, and thank you for taking the time here on the podcast today.
Yes, sir. Keith, thanks for having me. I very much appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.